Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the May 2023 Home Education Conference held in Salt Lake City, Utah.
My name is Really Muscle Mouth Mel, and I am the captain, the HSS Epic Adventure. And while you guys may not be aware of it, you have been conscripted to serve on my pirate ship today. So, just so you know, you all now need to have pirate names of your own. So, here's the deal. There's some piratey or oceany terms. If you want to be alliterative, like I was, take one that starts with the first letter of your first name and hook it either at the beginning or the end, like Buccaneer Bill or Jolly Roger Jane. You have just a minute. Now, if you have questions now, you have to address me by that name. Got it? Because we are on a ship, and we are going to sail away from port. Okay, you ready for me to move? Okay. The other thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to steal all of your preconceived notions about homeschooling. You got it? You no longer remember what you thought homeschooling was all about, because I'm going to teach you a different way, the pirate way. So we're going to discover on this trip pearls of wisdom. Remember the pearls. Gems of understanding. Remember gems. And treasures of knowledge. As I go through some of these slides, and it's not going to be all slide, as I go through some, you'll notice they'll have treasure boxes, pearls, and gems. Maybe there'll be things that you particularly want to pay attention to. Otherwise, you can just stay on land like the rest of the landlubbers do. All right, so I have a question I want you to put in your minds before we get started, and I want you to think about this as we go throughout the presentation. If you could give your children one gift through their years of homeschooling, what would it be? Okay? I'm not going to ask that question again. It's just for you. But hopefully by the end of this presentation, you will have figured out that maybe there's a better way to get your children where you really want them to be at the end of their homeschool journey. And it might just be the pirate way, or an explorer way, or a naturalist way, or Moana's way, or Harry Potter's way, or whatever way, right? But that's up to you to decide. So the first thing we need to do is lay a foundation. Yeah, we're on the ocean, but if our boat doesn't have a foundation, guess what? We're sinking, folks, and I'm not going down with the ship. You guys are going down first. So, the first principle of learning, every time I turn around, I don't have this written on my thing, is intelligence is a function of experience. Do you understand what that means? If you don't experience it, you can't know it. Does that make sense? You can't know something that you've never been exposed to. Okay. Learning is an inseparable partnership between mind and body. How many of you have boys? Do they hold still? No, no, they don't. And a lot of girls don't either. You will find that when your body moves, you learn better. You want to put your child on a trampoline and have them spell words? They'll learn them faster than if they learn them sitting at a desk. You want to have your child write their ABCs in a thing of shaving cream, or even better, whipped cream, because they lick their fingers? They'll learn faster. I have a daughter who can't talk on the phone if she's not pacing. She talks like this. She'll be on the phone pacing like this. She gets 10,000 steps in by noon. She's 40. No, she's not. She's 38. 38. And she still has to pace to learn. Okay. There are multiple intelligences to solve problems and to produce product. This one's a little bit tougher to understand, so I'm going to go through it really fast. We all learn in different ways, and we all have different talents and skills. Some of them are similar, and so would be considered all part of the same intelligence. Others are not. It has been stated that perhaps we have as many as 8 or 9 different intelligences that we can be proficient at. But just like a fish can't climb trees and a cat can't swim, our children don't all learn the same, but they can produce things that are worthy of praise regardless of the intelligence that they tend to have. Learning is a two-step process. Number one, pattern building. And number two, or pattern seeking, sorry, and then number two is program building. You need to have the pattern before you can build the program. You have to lay the foundation before you can add on to it. Does that make sense? Have I lost anybody yet? Well, maybe I'll send you off the plank. All right, the very last one. Personality and temperament has an impact on learning and performance. Let me ask you a quick question. Have any of you tried to teach your children when you were angry at them? How did it go? Have any of you had a child who throws a tantrum and you try to get them to do something? Anything. Does it work? When is the best time to get your child to learn? When they're happy, when they're excited. How many of them are happy and excited when you say, sit down at the table and do your math? Not mine. Okay. Robert Sylvester, who is a famous psychologist and educator, PhD, says emotion drives attention, and attention drives learning, memory, problem solving, and just about everything else. How are you grabbing your kids' attentions emotionally? Are you taking them on pirate journeys? If I had a real ship in here, we'd be on it instead of in this classroom, but I don't. Okay, so now that you know the 5 principles of learning, and the role of our emotions and what they play in learning, let's learn about what epic adventures are. Okay? So every letter in the word epic stands for something. And they all stand for ways that your brain, things that your brain needs in order to learn. So the very first thing, E, is exposure. So the brain function number one that we're going to talk about is how we ignite our child's interest. They can't be excited or interested in anything if they haven't first been exposed to it. So the brain function is gathering information. The more things you expose your children to, be it pirates and mermaids and ships, or naturalists or Renaissance minds, or heroes or villains, any of these things, the more things you expose your child to, the more information they're able to gather. That make sense? Have I lost anybody in here yet? Okay, so there are two kinds of exposure. Example. Can any of you think of a way that example would play into that? Boy, I have a silent crew here. Right. Okay, so which one is your child going to emulate, right? Both of them. Your child's going to emulate both of those. If you read books, they're going to want to read books. If you're playing on their phone, Mom, can I have your phone? Can I have my own phone? Right? The second way is experiences. So how can experiences help our kids gather information? Okay, this is what Confucius said. I hear and I forget. How many of you can say that that's true for you? Yeah, me. I see and I remember. I experience and I understand. Where do we want to get our kids in the educational homeschool environment? Do we want them forgetting, remembering, or understanding? Okay, this gentleman over here, we'll call him Scrawny Leg Phil. Hardtack Compton. See, he didn't tell me his name. I didn't know. I have to give my own. All right, so. Okay, so exposure comes through the senses. You notice the gem there. This is a gem that you need to know about, something you need to collect. So we're going to do a little science lesson. You guys like science? Well, good, because you're going to get it. So how many of you have heard of Aristotle? When was he alive? Yeah, like 200 BC time frame. Yeah, way before the cell phone. Did you know that Aristotle is the one who came up with our five senses? So I'm going to ask you a real important question here. Do you think that any of our scientists in the modern day can come up with any more than those five senses? Well, I'm going to tell you something. They can. They can. And if you do any type of research into senses, you'll find that scientists disagree on how many we have. But since we learn through our brain, we're going to go with the consensus of neuroscientists. And they say we have 21 senses. 21 senses. All right. Why is that important? I'll get to that in just a second. So, because senses are important in the learning process, the more senses that you use in learning, the more you retain. Okay, so we're going to go through the top six ways to retain or to learn information. And we're going to talk about how many senses they activate. The number one way to learn is a being there experience. Do you understand what I mean when I say that? You're actually there in the moment. How many of you have been on a ship, a real ship, not our fake ship? All right, let me ask you a few questions. Can you remember what the ocean felt like as you were on that ship? What it smelled like? The sound of the birds flying overhead. Can you remember the sway of the boat? Can you remember, the spray on your face and the feel of that? Can you remember getting your sea legs and then trying to walk on land afterwards? So we stop at a beach, right? We have to stop at an island where there's a beach. How many of you walked in the sand when you were on the beach? How many of you can remember what that feels like? Are your toes curling? Yeah, how many of you had your toes curl? Yeah, because you remember it. It was a being there experience. It activated it can activate up to 21 of those 21 senses. And it's the only type of experience that can. Okay, the second one is immersion. These experiences are ones that take the place of a being there. Sometimes you can't be there. I mean, there really aren't very many pirate ships, so we have to pretend, right? We dress like pirates. We eat pirate food. Sometimes we even speak pirate speak. I'm not really good at it, but, you know, arr, matey, I can do about that much, right? Call you landlubbers. I can do that kind, right? And I can dress the part. I can eat pirate food like hardtack. I can collect pirate treasures. Immersion, no matter what type it is, you can do anywhere up to 15 of those 21 senses. Renaissance fairs, gathering of the clans, all kinds of things that you can do. Even looking, you know, that type of stuff. What did I put on here? Cooking, dressing up and pretending, cooking and eating foods in a culturally correct manner. All right, hands-on with the real thing. Everybody loves this hands-on stuff, and it's great, right? With the real thing, that means using real power tools to build something that's really usable. It means looking through a telescope at the night sky. Anything that's using actually something real in a real life situation. And this way you can activate up to 12 of your senses. All right. Come on. Hands-on using representational items. For example, building a model. In this picture, he's built a fish trap using a 2-liter bottle and fishing line. Do you think they had those in the 1600s when they were building fish traps? They didn't. So representational items. You can activate up to 8 of your senses. Still pretty good, right? Okay, secondhand learning. Lectures, like I'm doing, right? Lectures. Movies, documentaries. This method of learning will activate up to three of our senses. Lecturing your kids generally gets 2 of them, not the full 3. Symbolic, math equations, reading. This can do up to 2. So tell me your learning methods now. How many of your senses and your children are you activating? If you want long-term learning, you have to strive for those that get up there in the senses. All right, so there is one caveat, though, to these numbers. And that is, if you have had a being there experience before you start learning in a symbolic way or a secondhand way or a hands-on way, you can activate more, far more of those senses, because remember your curling tolls? They will too. They'll remember what they've experienced. Okay. Susan Kovalik, who is a science teacher who turned into a trainer and started teaching in this way, this epic style, says the richer the sensory input, the greater the physiological growth in the brain, and thus the greater the learning that will be wired into long-term memory. And isn't that our goal? To get everything wired into long-term memory. Okay. E. We're still on E. Shoot. Dang, I keep thinking we'll get through that E. This E lasts forever. All right, so another science lesson. Learning is a result of dendrite growth. Do you guys know what dendrites are? Okay. All of us were born with a brain, I hope. Okay, our brains have at least 100 billion brain cells. 100 billion brain cells. Okay, they're called neurons. As you listen to, talk about, or practice something, fibers called dendrites grow out of the neurons. So you can see the rounder type things, the big ones, that kind of look like a circle with a circle inside, those are neurons. The little things feeding off of those are dendrites. Okay, so this is important. So learning is built as your network of dendrites grows higher and higher. New dendrites can sprout from existing dendrites. So you're building new knowledge upon things that you already know. Making sense so far? Growing your dendrites takes time and practice. When two dendrites grow close together, a chemical or electrical message can now be sent from one neuron to another, connecting them so that they can share knowledge back and forth between them. Okay, this is called synapse. So if you learn a subject or a skill about anything, right, you need specific dendrites that will connect to specific neurons at specific synapses. So your neurological network grows more and more massive with each new piece of information that you learn. Get this, somebody do the math. You can grow as many as 10,000 connections per neuron, okay, times the 100 billion neurons you've got. It's a lot that you write. And how many of us use that? Okay. We want to use as many as we can. All right, so as you practice something, your related dendrites develop a thick, fatty coating, and the thicker dendrites pass signals over to synapses more quickly. So the thicker your dendrite, the faster it will pass the neurons. The coating will also reduce interference, enabling you to come up with answers more quickly. Understanding that dendrites build upon existing dendrites, we realize students need the opportunity to grow a foundation dendrite for each topic before they can start to build on it, right? Just like we build our foundation before we started on our EPIC, right? Okay. So what should you do? You should spread out a smorgasbord for your children. Don't just limit them to what you can find in one textbook. Find the noble ideas and the great ones and the people that you really want them to learn about. Because if you don't expose them, nobody else is going to. Okay, we're going to number two, patterns. P stands for patterns. Brain function number two, remember what was brain function number one? Gathering information. Brain function number two is to make meaning of the information we've gathered. We hardwire meaningful learning into our children's long-term memory through patterns. Notice our treasure up there. The brain is a pattern-seeking device. It works much like a computer. If you can tell it where to place the information it is learning, it's easier to retrieve it. How many of you have saved a file and not ever been able to find it? Uh-huh. Our kids do that by the way that they learn. If they learn things that aren't connected, then they don't have a pattern to file it into. If they learn things in a way that's connected in a pattern, then they are able to file it in a way they can more easily retrieve it. Does that make sense? Okay, we're going to play a game. I'm going to prove to you that this works. Okay, I'm dividing you in half. This side over here to my left, so you're right, team one. This side here, team two. You across the back, you can be two. Okay, good, good, glad. Glad to make know that. Don't want to separate you from your wife there. Okay, team one, team two. Okay, ready? Two, close your eyes. All right, team one, are you ready? Pay very close attention. Don't say anything. Okay, team one, close your eyes. Team two, open your eyes. Team one, your eyes closed. No cheating over there. Okay, team two. Okay, I gave each team the same amount of time. Now, we're going to see how well you did. I'm going to show you something, and I want you to tell me what it is. Everybody open your eyes. I want you to tell me what it is. Okay. What is that? Two? Okay. What is that? Six? Six? Four? Four? Six? Which one? 6. You guys sure that it's 6? You guys sure it's 4? Okay. Let me show you the slide that Team 1 was shown. Or this is slide Team 2. This is what Team 2 was shown. Are you looking at it? You think 4 was right when you said that? This is what Team 1 was shown. All right. Now, the exact same numbers, the exact same thing around the numbers, but when you show it in a pattern, it's easier to remember. Novel concept. Yeah. Anyway, fun game, right? Yes. And you couldn't, there's no pattern. Right, but there was a pattern, but you couldn't figure it out. If you'd had enough time, maybe, right? But if we give our children information in a pattern, and ourselves, right, then we're more likely to be able to recall it when we need it. Okay. When exposed to information within a pattern, your child will more easily be able to use, catalog, and retrieve information for future use. Okay. Another science lesson. My goodness, it's science. So we're back to the dendrites. If the information is meaningful, and your child's brain is what determines if it's meaningful, they'll make meaning through patterns or lack thereof, right? If there's no pattern, to them it doesn't mean anything. If there's a pattern, it has meaning. Your child's brain will make electrofiring synapse connections. Her brain will be on fire, literally. Sets off an electric spark. Brain's on fire once they know how to connect things in patterns. So the good thing about an epic adventure is that it lights not only brains on fire, but hearts on fire. And when you are able to connect the two, remember we talked about emotions in the beginning, right? And now we're talking about dendrite growth and patterns here. If you're able to connect both, then you've got their brains and their hearts, and they are tied into whatever it is that you're trying to learn with them. Really a key concept. And when I learned that, it changed the way I homeschooled forever. Okay, we call this pattern an epic adventure. Come on. All right, the epic adventure is a year-long learning pattern that integrates virtually every subject. If you are learning with a year-long theme, and you can decide whatever that theme is, and you can hook it into any type of curriculum that you're doing, if you learn with a year-long theme, then that learning pattern will integrate everything you're learning, be it cooking, or math, or science, or history, or language arts, or dance, or drama. Whatever it is you want to learn, you can fit it into your pattern. Maria Montessori, how many of you have heard of her? Yeah, pretty famous educator, isn't she? She says, curriculum should not be planned in such a manner that each subject is treated as a separate entity disconnected from everything else. And yet, how do most of our children learn? Language arts, that may be totally disconnected from what you're learning in history, which is totally disconnected from what you're learning in science, which is totally disconnected. So how are your kids making patterns out of any of this? And I'll tell you how they make meaning. It's by what they like. That's it. That's how they make meaning and decide what's important, by what they like. Okay. Susan Kovalik says, if there is to be power in your learning experiences, it must come from tapping the energies and curiosities of your children, freeing them from artificial fragmentations, and unleashing the awesome power of the brain. When your child repeatedly sees seemingly unrelated things connected in a meaningful way and a pattern, their mind will be trained to see the connections between all things. The sign of a Renaissance mind, a forward thinker, somebody who can think outside the box. Isn't that what we want? Okay. Another fun quote that I like. I love this quote. If teachers would see themselves first as purveyors of pleasure rather than instructors in skill, they may find that skill will flourish where pleasure has been cultivated. If your kids are having fun, they'll learn more than if they're not. Pretty simple. Okay. So we're on now to the letter I, inquiry. Brain function number 3 is to create new ideas. Unleash your child's lifelong spirit of inquiry. We want our children to ask questions, not regurgitate answers. If they learn how to ask questions and then seek for the answers either from others or on their own, they'll be lifelong learners, not just kids who remember till the test is over. Howard Gardner said, your child must do something with the information or he hasn't really learned it, because intelligence is a problem-solving and or product-producing capability. Karen Kidrick Cox, who is the originator of the EPIC acronym for this way of learning, she took a model that had been used worldwide and put it into a homeschool setting. And this is what she says. The spirit of inquiry enters when something has captured our attention and pulled us to engagement in meaningful work. This is what we hope to do with our children. This is one of the experiences we hope them to have regularly as we step forth on exciting learning adventures. This is the realm and significance of inquiry work in the EPIC adventure. Inquiry is a question, a wondering, one that motivates us to ask. That's really what we want our kids to do. At least that's what I want my kids to do. Susan Kovalik again. Numerous studies suggest that the brains of spectators, this one really got me when I first read this years ago, however rich the visual images, are no different from those brains which live in impoverished environments. We don't want our kids to be spectators, right? In other words, if there is no active involvement, there is minimal activity in the brain. Inquiries are the activities in which your child works with the information according to his or her individual choices, interests, and talents. Does it make sense to give everybody the same 500-word essay on sea turtles when some people don't like to write? Why don't we have an artist do the drawing and be able to identify them? Why don't we have ones that love science do something more scientific and research maybe where they live and how they travel from place to place and what, you know, the same child, you know, the same assignment for every child makes no sense. We want them to inquire and learn the way they learn best so that they can actually produce a product that benefits them, not benefits the instructor, right? So, each child has their own learning style. Each child has the things that they are really good at, and not saying that they shouldn't learn how to write, but every assignment shouldn't be the same for every child, and they should have some choice. First of all, like I said, it plays to their strengths, but second of all, if they have choice, they're more likely to want to do it. Secret weapon. It's a secret weapon, much like my sword. Secret weapons. And we like those, right? Inquiries give your children the opportunity to experiment with the information. Think creatively outside the box, right? Don't pinpoint them. See new possibilities and create new ideas. Providing meaningful inquiry choices to allow your child to work with the information. Help your child discover ways to do research. Provide him with a way to obtain the basic tools, skills, and materials for his problem-solving, product-producing ventures. Show your child what inquiry looks like. It's a great death scene. Great death scene when we reenacted D-Day. She was hit with a bomb, a marshmallow bomb. It exploded all over and she died right there on the beach. It was really sad. But boy, it was a great death scene and the kids had a great time because she was willing to show her kids and the rest of our kids what inquiry looks like. Okay. Now, come on. Last one, C, contribution. Brain function number 4, act on those ideas. Inspire your child to make a contribution to the world around them. That does not mean that we expect them to be contributing to food banks every week and the service projects wherever, but it does mean that we expect them to be able to use the information that they have learned in a meaningful and a positive way within their family, within their community. And some of them will go on to be, you know, worldwide. Give your child a pattern with inherent greatness and significant meaning connected to their lives. Leslie Hart, who is a PhD in neuroscience, says the more powerful a brain, the more complex, finer, and subtle patterns it can detect, such as seeing symbolic meaning connected to one's own life. That's what you're trying to do by connecting patterns. Originally, the kids will see everything that's connected in a way that's right in front of their face. But eventually, they'll start to see the symbolic meaning and be able to then take and connect it in other areas of their life, things that you might not ever expect that they would find a connection because you've taught it to them in a pattern. You are the catalyst, the spark that lights your child's brain on fire, and the spark that lights your child's heart on fire. You've got to remember that. Nobody else can do that. You are the catalyst. All right, so let's talk for a second about how you can incorporate epic experiences and adventures into your current homeschool. I'm sure some of you have had some ideas. But one way is to set a theme for your family for the year, or even for the semester or the month. Set a theme and see what you can find in your curriculum where you can work it around to, like the first time that I did one of these with my kids, we did, get this, the five senses. This was before I'd done any research, right? And we did it as a summer thing before I started homeschooling my kids. And every summer we would set a new theme, and every summer we would do something fun during the summer until I started homeschooling. And then I started my first epic adventure as a homeschool, and we set the theme of China because it was the year of the Chinese Olympics. And I was using as my curriculum what every fourth grader needs to know. How many of you have seen those books, right? And I picked out everything about China and the Orient in there. And we learned science. He made his own abacus. We learned how earthquakes, did you know that they made the first earthquake monitors? Really cool, like back in like 600 AD. Anyway, really cool things that we learned because we studied in an epic way that we would never have even thought to do. So if possible, try to fit your language arts, your science, your history, all around each other for at least a period of time. And if you can do it for the whole year, it works even better. Allow your children to change assignments to fit their learning styles. I'm going to give you two quick examples. I think I've got time to do this. My youngest son, Caleb, is the first one I started homeschooling. And we were doing an American history year. And he wanted to, one of the inquiry suggestions in our curriculum was to write a research paper on the bald eagle. Okay. K Caleb was, what, seventh grade, I think. He came up to me and he says, Mom, I want to do this, but I don't want to write a research paper. And I said, oh, okay, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? Remember those words. He said, I want to do a web page, a website, not a web page, a website. All right, so am I the only one thinking that's way harder than writing a paper? You have to do all the same writing. You have to learn all the coding. You have to find all the pictures. And then you have to set it up in separate pages, link them all together. What was my... Of course you can do a website, Caleb. Right? Right. Sometimes kids will surprise you and they'll come up with something that did the exact same thing that the original thing said. Research the bald eagle. And look what he learned instead. So much more. Okay, second Caleb example. His examples are more fun. Morgan's were a little more boring. Not really, but they just weren't as fun to say. So we were studying World War II. He would have been 12. And one of the inquiry choices that he had was to research propaganda and how governments could make something bad look good or something good look bad. He grabbed his friend Sean, and Sean and Caleb decided that they were going to make a video. Sean's brother, older brother, had just shown him a horror film. And so they took a little clip from this horror film and they showed it on the TV, videotaping their reaction, right? It's a little boy underneath the covers just shivering in fright. And Caleb and Sean are sitting there laughing and pointing, oh, isn't that funny? That's so funny. Really, really hilarious, right? Well, then they got three of Caleb's nieces, three of my granddaughters, they were like 5 and 2 and 1, to come downstairs. They were living up above us, and we had a duplex. And so they came down the stairs, and they walked in. Hi, Uncle Caleb. Hi, Uncle Shawnee. We want to watch TV, Caleb and Sean said. What do you want to watch? We want to watch Dora the Explorer. The girls were enthralled in front of the TV, and Caleb and Shawnee, you're going, Anyway, that's their video. Very effective. They learned a lot, but not exactly what they were told to do. It was something they came up with on their own. Let your kids lead the way sometimes. They'll learn a lot more. Okay. Imagine now that you've been informed that you are about to begin a study of the geography, history, and culture of Persia, India, China, and Japan. Sounds interesting? How many of you are ready to do a deep dive right now into those cultures? Raise your hand. Okay. Now, imagine instead you were ushered in costume into a silky-looking tent with the scent of burning incense wafting through the air. Persian music sets the tone for a foreign meal that you sit on the ground to eat with your fingers. And soon, Scheherazade comes in with tales of the Arabian Nights and introduces you to a magic carpet ride to the lands of enchantment for your year school. Which one would you rather do? It's a no-brainer, isn't it? It's a no-brainer. Well, which one do you think your kids would like to do? And which one do you think your kids would remember when they're your age now? I can tell you, because I've done it. Not that particular one, but other ones. And I can tell you, they'll remember the adventure. They're not going to remember hardly anything about the other. You can choose to use EPIC principles in your current curriculum. You can also choose to buy an EPIC adventure that's already been written, or you can write your own adventure. Writing your own adventure takes a lot of time. Ask Laura. We've written a couple together. But they're fun, and they're well worth every second you put into it. Why waste your children's precious growing up years on an unbearable sea of boredom and meaningless busy work? You create the setting that captivates or alienates. Hand your children a quest for learning through an epic adventure and sink those efforts into an education worthy of their time and yours. Nothing your child is exposed to is insignificant. Let that sink in for a second, because they're exposed to a lot. Your role in the epic adventure is to make sure that you share the highest and the best with your child, because we become what we gaze upon. And if they're gazing upon other things that aren't worthy of their time, that's what they're going to become. Kind of scary thought, isn't it? Epic adventures are designed to maximize brain-compatible elements. They're built totally on how the brain learns best. They're year-long depth and breadth studies based around a central theme that integrate all subjects, teach skills in the context of meaningful inquiry work, and internalize the epic pattern of a scholar. Choose a concept, any concept. Couch it in the pattern of an epic adventure. Share your passion as you invite your children into an adventure. My children have been heroes. They've been Harry Potter characters. They've been, I don't know, what have they been? They've been American history detectives. They've been detectives, steampunk detectives when we did Sherlock Holmes. We've done all kinds, and they love it. They have their costumes, they wear their costumes, and they love them. They're fun for the whole family. You can teach it family style, so you don't have to have a separate curriculum for each child. Younger learners benefit from working with their older siblings. Multi-age siblings can work together. Each learner can pursue their own personally chosen inquiries on their own level. And you'll be surprised to find that not all little kids are dumb. You'll find that there are some kids that are 4 and 5 and 6 that get concepts that some of the teenagers aren't quite grasping. You don't know where their intelligence is. Remember, there's multiple intelligences, and you don't know which one you've got in your kids. Okay, almost done, folks. Select an adventure that will ignite your child's interest. Choose a subject of interest to you, especially when your kids are young. When they're older, let them be involved. Consider inherent greatness of subject. Not everything's worthy of your time or theirs. And then choose how you're going to couch it in an adventure. You can be knights, newspaper reporters, naturalists, all kinds of things, whatever is fun. Moana, we did that one. You did that one. I helped, right? Romance your child's heart. Out-romance the competition, because people are out there trying to romance your children's heart. Don't let them do it. You want to be the one that determines what's important to them, not outside forces that may not have their best interests in mind. Last two slides. Education is not the filling of a pail. It's not how much we want to stuff inside of them, but the lighting of a fire. So I hope you remember that, and I hope that you've learned something new. I hope it's been fun. Don't sink when you get off the boat. I'd recommend you take the gangplank and not the thin one on the other side. Thanks for coming, guys.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.